don't need to bend to the system, create your own path, but make sure then that you're going to your leaders and advocating for, look at what I'm doing, XYZ. It's not the traditional way that you do leadership, but look at the impact it's having. I need to be rewarded for this and to fight for that, you know?
Welcome to Off the Chart, a business and medicine podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices. My name is Lawson Luttrell. I'm the assistant editor of Medical Economics, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. As we wrap up Women in Medicine Month, I sat down with Dr. Yalda Javapur, a family physician in Washington, D.C., and director of the Robert Graham Center at the American Academy of Family Physicians, along with Dr. Annie Kempel, a qualitative scientist with the American Board of Family Medicine. We talked about their December 2024 study on early career women family physicians and what it reveals about leadership, recognition, and the future of the profession. In our conversation, we dive into the invisible leadership roles that women physicians already take on, why those contributions are overlooked, and how medicine can move forward towards a more collaborative and inclusive model of leadership. Dr. Javapur and Dr. Kempel, thank you so much for joining us, and now let's get into the episode. So we can just jump right in. September is Women in Medicine Month, and we're going to be talking about a study that both of you had a part in publishing late last year. The study highlights that women physicians already take on leadership roles that medicine rarely acknowledges. Can you describe what that looks like in practice?
Yeah, I can speak to the practice, and then Annie can speak to what she found in the study when she talked to other doctors. So, you know, I still practice clinically as a family physician, along with directing a research center, the Robert Graham Center. I think, you know, in the family physician role, a lot of the times we're doing things that are that I consider leadership that aren't being considered by our health system as leadership. So for example, mentorship, I think, is a great example of leadership, but that typically is not compensated or valued by the higher ups in healthcare systems. Teaching, I consider leadership, obviously, also not valued, not compensated at all, and not valued in terms of, you know, higher ups in the healthcare system. I also think leading the team within the clinic and doing it in a collaborative way is a lot of things that, you know, all physicians, but particularly female physicians, take on that role. It's not compensated at all. It's not valued at all in any way in the higher ups. And these are important things that make our system run and foster the future generation of physicians, but aren't compensated in any way, whether it's monetarily or not monetarily.
I would absolutely echo the mentorship and teaching aspect. It's incredible that women are supporting other women, but that really needs to be recognized and rewarded. I would also add just a little bit of the detail from interviews to the women taking on leadership roles within their clinic. A lot of times that would look like the women in the study identifying where there were problems with workflow or where that certain people could be more efficient, especially working in their EHR. And they would go out of their way, take time, they're out of the day or after work to help people increase workflow, get better at their job. And that was in no way rewarded or recognized.
And kind of building off of that, could you talk about what that means really for career advancement? I mean, compensation down the line, risk of burnout maybe for these women physicians who are doing so much but aren't really getting any kind of reward or feedback for it?
I mean, I think you can look at this in two ways, right? There are things that you need to put on your CV for career advancement, right? And then you can look at it in terms of wages for career advancement. And the way that we're not valuing, not recognizing, not rewarding these leadership activities that women take on leaves it so that there's nothing to put on their CV that's valued to help them get kind of that next higher role or next higher role. And also, there's no monetary compensation. So, you know, that gender wage gap persists because they are, as Annie said, spending extra time doing these things that, are benefiting the entire organization, but aren't considered leadership and aren't compensated. And so in both of those ways, I think in a way that we are, I guess, penalizing women for taking on leadership roles that aren't considered in the current way that we view things as traditional leadership roles.
Yes, the only thing I would add to that is a lot of these things are also considerable emotional labor. And so there's kind of the emotional, psychological impact of doing these incredible things with no, basically no thanks. That can be really frustrating. And there was a lot of frustration in interviews.
The next part of the study that I want to talk about is many of the physicians who were interviewed described formal leadership positions as overly bureaucratic or disciplinary. Why do you think that leadership in medicine is still defined that way? And how does it affect women who might otherwise want to pursue those kinds of leadership positions?
Yeah, I mean, briefly, medicine has given us so many great things, but it's not immune to the white patriarchal influences that infect so many of our institutions, not only in the US, but around the world. And I think leadership will continue to be defined as bureaucratic and disciplinary and so on until more women and others enter leadership positions and make real change and really change our understanding of what leadership does and can mean. Yeah, I'm sure you'll have a lot there.
I mean, I think that's exactly right. But yes, medicine is not immune to what happens in leadership in industries all around the world. I will also say that, what society, maybe it's just American society, I can't talk for other societies, but what society views as a strong leader, which is characteristics of a strong leader, which is someone who can make the tough decisions and tends to be really strong-willed and, loud voice and can stand up and command a crowd. What we heard from many of these women, but also what we know just from experience, is that women lead in different ways. They tend to be more collaborative, more. It doesn't have to be my voice, it's all of our voices. And that is not what we value as a society in leaders. And so even though a woman is, in my opinion, acting like a leader, the health system that she works for may not feel that she is a leader because she doesn't have that loud voice. She's not standing up in front of a crowd. She's not making those unilateral decisions.
Yeah, one physician said, and this is a quote, people in leadership positions are not interested in community and collaboration. And that was a turnoff to her. That made her not want to enter a leadership position.
Say, Keith, this is all well and good, but what if someone is looking for more clinical information?
Oh, then they want to check out our sister site, patientcareonline.com, the leading clinical resource for primary care physicians. Again, that's patientcareonline.com.
And continuing on that note, in your interviews with, I believe it was 25 family physicians, what stood out most about how women physicians define or practice leadership differently than the traditional models?
Yeah, I mean, I think exactly what Yalda was laying out, what that physician said, just the collaborative approach, the solidarity, the communication, or the community approach over the I'm going to make the decision, I'm going to be the one doing everything. Yeah, I think that's what stood out most to me among all of the 25 interviews.
Could you each share an example of the invisible leadership work that women are doing and why it does go kind of unrecognized? I know you talked about teaching and mentorship, but maybe some specifics in practice.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, about something that we haven't shared yet. I think Annie really did touch on this, but some of those quality improvement metrics that women take on, and it goes to what we just talked about how they do it in a collaborative and kind of community-based way. I don't know a better way to say that, but it's not, I'm the doctor, I think this is what needs to improve, therefore we're going to implement that and improve it. It's like, hey guys, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? Should we do it this way or that way? Some and I think, and again, when we're talking about all this, we're speaking in generalities, right? There are people in each gender who definitely, there are men who are very collaborative and women who are not, right? But we're talking about the general population. And I think that, some people may see that as you're the physician, you make the decision, you're the boss. And you're being kind of wishy-washy by asking all these people for input and saying like, let's take a vote and make the decision together. No, like you just make that decision, and that's why they don't seem like a leader. But it's actually, there's so many studies that show that collaborative way of leadership actually is a very important way to run anything, right? Whether it's workflows in the clinic or a large organization, the importance of transparency, collaboration, not making unilateral decisions, but that's not what's valued. So I think it keeps going back to that. They're doing kind of this silent work, and maybe not being seen as leaders because of the way they go about doing the silent work.
Something else that came up in the study was kind of how these physicians are dealing with that balance, right, between their careers and their families. What did participants say specifically about balancing leadership responsibilities and their career goals with family?
Yeah, so there's kind of this myth that, and this is not only a myth, that women kind of make a conscious choice to not advance their careers when they have children. And this may absolutely be true for some women. Like, there's no wrong path. I'm not saying that. But participants talked about how it wasn't their kids or their older relatives they had to care for that kept them from taking on a formal leadership position. Yes, women do overwhelmingly still to have. Tend to have a full-time job at home with care work and homework, but they cited other reasons for not wanting to be in administration or leadership first. They encountered discrimination due to being a woman who's pregnant or a woman with children, but that was seen as a barrier. And if anything, they found a lot of support and encouragement from their families that they didn't necessarily find from administrators or their institution.
And I think, just to give some real life examples of what Annie is saying, it really is a lot of the time other people making the decision for you without even asking how you feel about it. I mean, there have been so many circumstances where I've been told, oh, we didn't think you'd want to be on that committee because it was at 6 p.m. and don't you have to run around with the kids and get dinner ready? And I'm like, why me and not my husband? Like, why am I the one that needs to be running around with the kids? So, and I shared this before, like my husband, who's also a physician, never gets to, we have the same amount of kids. He never gets told that, like, oh, we didn't think you wanted to be on that committee because it's at 6 p.m. or it's a Saturday at 10 a.m. And those are the opportunities that are just never presented to you to make that decision because people are making that decision for you based on, and I think a lot of times they're doing it to protect you. I understand, but in a way it's too paternalistic. I don't need to be protected. Just ask me. If I want to run around with my kids and don't want to do that, I will say that. And that is a fine choice, but like, let me have the choice.
Absolutely, yeah. If practices and health systems don't broaden their definitions of leadership, what's at stake for primary care, the workforce as a whole, and for patients?
Yeah, I think we started to see this already, Austin. When you hear patients talk about medicine right now on social media, wherever, a lot of patients are being very disgruntled about how they're not being listened to, how, they're being told that, well, I don't know what's going on, and that's not what we do in medicine. And that's a very paternalistic view of way of practicing medicine, to not include the patient in that decision making, to not include the patient in their own health. And I think it stems from the way that we are leading health systems with that strong, unilateral, I'm making the decision voice. What would happen if instead we had really collaborative, transparent leadership at the top that included the community in decisions that were being made about health systems, about insurance, I feel like patient care would improve. There are things that are really important to patients that we as a health system never really take into consideration because our leaders are making those unilateral business decisions without thinking about, well, what do the patients actually want? So I think there is a translation there between how leadership is viewed, like what women value in leadership, what men value in leadership, and how that's being translated to healthcare right now. And I think the more women you have in leadership, or just in general, the more diversity of thought you have in leadership, it's going to ultimately be better for patient outcomes.
Hey there, Keith Reynolds here, and welcome to the P2 Management Minute. In just 60 seconds, we deliver proven, real-world tactics you can plug into your practice today. Whether that means speeding up check-in, lifting staff morale, or nudging patient satisfaction north. No theory, no fluff, just the kind of guidance that fits between appointments and moves the needle before lunch. But the best ideas don't all come from our newsroom. They come from you. Got a clever workflow hack, an employee engagement win, or a lesson learned the hard way? I want to feature it. Shoot me an email at kreynolds@mjhlifesciences.com with your topic, a quick outline, or even a smartphone clip. We'll handle the rest and get your insights in front of your peers nationwide. Let's make every minute count together. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next P2 Management Minute.
Your paper also calls for innovative leadership models built on collaboration, flexibility, and balance. What might those models look like in real practice?
You know, it's a great question. I think we've talked somewhat about this. Like, you know, in practice, these models would look like including the community members who decisions are impacting, right? So, for example, if you're a healthcare system, you should have patients from the community as part of the leadership, and they should have as much of a voting role as the CEO of the health system does, because ultimately that's who you're serving, is that patient population. I also think just thinking in a very, that's like high level, but even just thinking at like a simpler, you know, on the ground, like the clinic level, are we, for example, do we have leaders within the clinic that are talking to the doctors and nurses and saying, hey, or doctors, nurses, patients maybe saying, hey, does this traditional 8-to-5 clinic schedule fit everyone's needs, or do we need to shift hours earlier or later? Simple things like that that no one thinks of doing because it's like, well, this is how it's always done. We're not going to ask people. We don't want to know the answer because then it's hard. Then we have to change things, right? So I think there are big, high system level things. And then there are smaller, you know, boots on the ground. If we had more collaboration in terms of how we set up physician schedule or clinic schedules, how we set up workflows in the clinic, things could really run better and improve for everyone who's there.
Yeah, I just want to pick up on one thread of that, which is I think a lot of times we see the way things are now is like the weather or the air we breathe. We're like, we can't fix this. We can't impact this. But our healthcare system and other systems was and continues to be built and maintained by people. And I think we can sometimes take this for granted. But like y'all just said, I think we can make real practice on practice. Real practical changes on an individual level. And I mean, it would be hard and long and slow, but I think that can lead to broader change.
Austin, I'll also give you like small examples. You know, we're used to working in like a certain time period of the day, and sometimes that's conducive to family life or caretaking, like taking care of elderly parents, and sometimes it's not. And, you know, like right now, I have a woman chair of my department. who is very aware of these things, and like everyone in the department now has these little things at the bottom of their email that's like, I may be answering you at a time that's convenient for me because of how I live my life. Please don't feel like you need to answer me right away. Answer at a time that's convenient to you. I mean, I know it seems like, okay, yeah, that's common. Yeah, everyone does that. But I'm telling you, when I was in medical school, when I was in residency, when I was first out in practice, no way. No way. Like, if you had that quote at the bottom of your email, people would be like, whoa, no, you answer my email when I want you to answer my email, right? So I think, you know, it's just like little changes like that that make the environment feel so much more welcoming for everyone and kind of change how we think about how things need to be run. And medicine is not unique there. I know that's happening in a lot of industries.
Absolutely, yeah. If you both could change one thing about how leadership is structured in family medicine, what would you change?
Gonna pass it to you, Yalda, as the physician. No
Really,
pressure.
I think I've touched on this. I think that the people at the top who need to be making the decisions, the leaders, need to be the people that are actually impacted by those decisions. So when we're talking healthcare, it needs to be a combination of physicians, support staff, nurses, front desk, and patients. It should not be, you know, someone with an MBA who's not practicing medicine or going to that clinic making the decisions for the physicians, nurses, and patients.
What advice would you give to these women who are in the early part of their careers as physicians? They see themselves as leaders, but maybe they feel boxed out by the traditional paths of leadership.
I think find a good mentor who has gotten to where you want to get to and ask them how they've done it. I think every system is different, every region is different. So you really need to find someone, whether they are a male mentor or a female mentor, and ask them how they got there. I would also say don't just think leadership is the way that we define leadership. You know, do leadership the way that you want to do it, do the things that you want to do, and then make a strong argument for why that should be rewarded, either financially or in other ways to your leadership. So you don't need to bend to the system, create your own path, but make sure then that you're going to your leaders and advocating for, look at what I'm doing, XYZ. It's not the traditional committee, it's not the traditional way that you do leadership, but look at the impact it's having. I need to be rewarded for this and to fight for that, you know?
Yeah, and I would say also think about how or start noticing the leaders in your environment, like who is a leader that isn't being recognized and rewarded, and what can you do to support them? And I don't know, I think going back to what we were talking about before with like community and collaboration, anything you can do to support that, even if you're not the one in that role, can kind of lead to lifting everyone up.
No, I'll also say just engage with your leadership. Like, I think people get disheartened and then just, you know, instead of engaging with the leadership, want to just dismiss them and be angry about it. And I think instead, take a meeting with your, you know, whoever it is, the chair of your department, the CEO. I mean, they are there to lead you. They will take meetings with you and go and air your grievances. And you never know. I mean, always assume good intent. They might be doing exactly what you want. It's just not communicated that way. And I think that's a great way to learn also, you know, what are good qualities in a leader, what are not good qualities in a leader as you're trying to develop yourself as a leader. So I think take those meetings, ask for those meetings. Get involved. I mean, I feel like, right, the squeaky wheel, what is it? The whatever gets the grease or the oil or whatever I'm not really great with sayings, but like, I think if you are the squeaky wheel, eventually they'll be like, maybe this person just needs to be on the leadership committee, you know? And if really that's what you want to do, I think keep making noise and keep engaging in a respectful way.
To end things on a positive note, what gives you optimism about the future of women in medical leadership?
I mean, I think just straightforward how critical and aware they are of the flaws in the current structure and system, and how brave and courageous they are to speak their mind and advocate not only on behalf of themselves, but on behalf of each other and other people to try to, you know, make any small change, even one that is really frustrating.
100% agree with that. This new generation gives me a lot of hope. I mean, they're, you know, when we have medical students or residents either rotate through clinic or come and spend a month with us doing research at the Graham Center, I'm always like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you're doing that, or, you know, feel confident enough to say that. You know, medicine used to be so hierarchical, where, you know, if you were the attending, everything you said goes. No one can question you. No one can ask, you know, are you sure this is right? Are you sure this is right? And I think that was horrible for patients. And I love that the new generation just comes in and questions everything. And I think that that is wonderful. That gives me hope. You know, they're not just going for systems the way they are. It's like, wait, but why are we doing it like this? But why are we doing it? I love that. I think that's great.
Is there anything that I didn't ask that you think is important to share?
I will just add, I think this entire conversation, we did talk kind of on a gender binary, and there is, you know, we understand that gender is not a binary. There are all these other different understandings of gender. All of the participants we interviewed self-identified as women. So I just wanted to make that note. And I also wanted to say that this is not, I think y'all mentioned this, but this is not only in medicine. Like, these issues are occurring in other places, in other ways. And so even if you aren't a physician, I'm sure, sadly, some of this will resonate with you.
Absolutely. I think that's a really important note, and an especially good point to end on. Dr. Jabapur and Dr. Campbell, thank you both so much for taking the time today.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Once again, that was a conversation that I had with Dr. Yalda Jabapur, a family physician in Washington, D.C., and director of the Robert Graham Center at the American Academy of Family Physicians, and Dr. Annie Kempel, a qualitative scientist with the American Board of Family Medicine. My name is Austin Luttrell, and on behalf of the whole medical economics and physicians practice teams, I'd like to thank you for listening to the show and ask you please subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. Be sure to check back on Monday and Thursday mornings for the latest conversations with experts sharing strategies, stories, and solutions for your practice. You can find us by searching Off the Chart wherever you get your podcasts. Also, if you'd like the best stories that medical economics and physicians practice publish delivered straight to your email 6 days of the week, subscribe to our newsletters at medicaleconomics.com and physicianspractice.com. Off the Chart, a Business of Medicine podcast, is executive produced by Chris Mazzolini and Keith Reynolds and produced by Austin Luttrell. Medical Economics, Physicians Practice, and Patient Care Online are all members of the MJH Life Sciences family. Thank you.